The Disciplined Investor is underwritten by Interactive Brokers, the professional's gateway to the world's markets. Their clients enjoy enhanced price execution via IB smart routing and lowest cost access to stocks, options, futures, and fixed income, all from a single integrated account. Learn more at IBKR.com.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
A blowout jobs report. Get out your S&P 500 4,000 hats. New highs into a new month. SPACs under scrutiny as the SEC takes a peek. And our guest today is Jack Schwager, author of the Markets Wizard series. He's with us. We're going to talk to him and find out more. All this and much more on episode number 708 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And here we are. Hey, how are you? Springing into April. The year is just cruising along. We got plenty of bright spots after a really dark 2020. Welcome to the show, episode number 708. I'm Andrew Horowitz. I'm a certified financial planner. I'm the host of this podcast, co-host of DH Unplugged. I'm also the founder of Horowitz & Company. If those of you are wondering, hey, what does this guy actually do when he's not podcasting, when he's not talking? Well, we basically are here helping people just like you with their IRAs, 401ks, individual investment accounts, financial planning, all looking to help you reach your financial goals, whatever it is, whether it's something for retirement or college planning or maybe just doing some estate planning, whatever it may be, that's what we're here for. We also spend an awful lot of our time just working the markets, investing portfolios, making sure that your portfolio allocation is appropriate, making sure that our trading strategy, hey, we're finding those names, those stocks that have great opportunity for the future. And I hear a lot from you, the listener, who is been writing me because you know that's what we do, and you've become kind of disenchanted, frustrated with the markets and how you're doing. A lot of people are frustrated. Maybe you. Maybe that, you know, you're kind of been investing along with the crowd in some of the Momo names and momentum, that is, and you've been chasing. And that worked pretty well through 2020, but that's kind of changed. Not working out so well right now. And a lot of people are really frustrated. And I understand totally. The problem is when you continue to chase returns, what ends up happening is that once those things change and you continue to chase because you're buying the dips in those stocks and they keep on dipping, it becomes very much a large hole that is very difficult to get out of. And I'm hearing this from you. And I think it bears mentioning, and something that's pretty well known but not always adopted by people who are investing, is we want to sell high, we want to buy low. I mean, that's pretty obvious. Now, sometimes there's benefits of actually buying high and selling higher, and that happens primarily when we're dealing with the whole area of momentum movement in a very aggressive bull market. But you have to understand when that bull market is starting to change. And when you have a significant change in the overall outlook, those kinds of moves, which are just, hey, pile in everything that I have, just keep on putting into that name, it just doesn't work anymore. That doesn't mean it won't work forever. But if you've noticed something, we have a very different kind of market condition and economic backdrop now that we've had in 2020, most of 2020. Obviously, 2020, we had many different markets. We had a bear market extraordinaire in February and March and through April, and then a bull market that was just wondrous from April through, let's say, November. And then all of a sudden, there was some inklings that interest rates were starting to move up a bit. And the rotation from growth to value is very strong. And when you're chasing momentum and you have that FOMO, so the MOMO and the FOMO, the momentum stocks and the fear of missing out, into the tail end of that bull run, it's oftentimes a recipe for disaster. Maybe you found yourself in that camp. You finally said, you know what? I give in. I'm buying that name. And it turned out that maybe it was good for a little while. And then it started to get a little rougher. And you said, you know what? Every time it's gone down so far, it's bounced right back up. So I'm going to go after it again. But this time it didn't. And now all of a sudden you're sitting there wondering, what do I do? And if you're looking at price only, and if you're looking at these impressive moves that we've seen, realize that there is the very real potential for volatility both ways, up and down. Now, I mean, listen, volatility is fine as long as it keeps on moving up. Listen, think about this. If you have 10% per day volatility, but it's only 10% up, who cares? We're really looking at the potential for volatility and on the downside. It's one thing if you see 5% move up, 5% move down, and then it kind of continually moves from bottom left to top right on the chart. Yet, when we have a situation where that turns, where it's 5% down, 10% down, 15% down, that's a problem, because if you continue to invest in that on the way down, there's a problem. And if, especially if you're not committed to the position that has something more than just price. In other words, you want to have some fundamental backstop in the discussion. If it's a name that just was moving because it was moving, that's it. That's the only reason it was moving, because it was moving. Fundamentals are lousy or non-existent, or maybe even not the fundamentals. The thesis. The thesis. Why is it that it's moving up? Well, let's make something up here. It's a EV-related name that is moving up because the prospect of the technology that they have, even though they're not making money now, is very real. And if that's the case, well, maybe there's something to be said about having a small percentage of your portfolio involved in that position and riding it out, because you really believe that that is going to be a technology that works and is going to be adopted and work well for the future. And if it does, it's going to be a major score. The problem is, if you're not committed to the position, you're going to get kicked out at the wrong time. And we've all heard recently, and you've read on Reddit and on Twitter, and you heard these phrases, the idea of paper hands and diamond hands, and almost making people feel bad if they don't have, quote, diamond hands. In other words, hold on forever. Forget that. What we call people who buy then lose their commitment rather easily is a phrase we call weak hands. There never really necessarily should be something that is like diamond, platinum, laser eye, blah, 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 whatever they're calling it these days, trying to goad you into holding on no matter what for their benefit. Remember, there's always two sides to a market. There's the buyer and there's the seller. Maybe three. The stooge. The stooge is who believes these people who are talking and trying to goad you into holding on no matter what, regardless of what is happening there. Get that out of your minds. Don't be that investor that you're simply buying in, selling out, and constantly losing. And if it is happening to you, stop it. Seriously, stop. I want you to end that process. You do not have to have the FOMO. I'm relieving you of that problem right now. There is no such thing as FOMO. Say it with me. There is no such thing as FOMO. When it comes to markets, FOMO will get me hurt. Write that down. Repeat it. Often. I get FOMO. I understand it. You know, you look at an Instagram and you see this great picture of, I don't know, a place, an object, a person, some food, people on boats. I mean, beautiful cars. I get it. But you know, jealousy and FOMO when it comes to markets is just a recipe for disaster. This whole idea of paper hands and diamond hands and even weak hands, it's a big issue because I don't want you to be that investor. I want you to know your style. Maybe you're a day trader. Maybe you're a swing trader. Maybe you're just a long-term investor. The problem is when you're crossing over to an area that you're not comfortable with, it's probably going to, well, end in failure. And the reason for that is that once you get out of your lane, you have a problem because now you're not comfortable. Now you're going to make mistakes. You need to know who you are, your personality for risk, and stay within that confine. I mean, think about a driver. You know, you're traveling on the road down at, what, 55 miles an hour, and normally that's where you're living. You're in the right lane on a three-lane highway, and you're doing just fine. But for some reason, there's someone in the back seat tapping on you. Hey, is this how fast you drive? Look at all the, go to the left. And you move to the left, and you're doing 65, and you're kind of uncomfortable. You're doing 70. You're uncomfortable. This is not what you usually do. And the problem is that doing things that you're uncomfortable with brings mistakes. For example, let's say that you can't deal with big market swings in your portfolio. You don't use leverage and, that you diversify. That's what you do. And for some reason, you decide, you know what, I want some action. I want this opportunity to get involved there. Well, you're not going to invest in mutual funds in that situation. Maybe you considered options. And then you start leveraging up and you see these massive swings in your portfolio. And what do? Probably sell right at the wrong time. You need to match your investing style to your personality so that you can have the best shot at success. Otherwise, you're playing a loser's game. Don't let FOMO get in the way and force you to make mistakes. I think now more than ever, it's really important. That doesn't mean you have to be absolutely 100% comfortable. There are going to be times in the markets that, yeah, you're not feeling so right. But then again, all it takes is making an adjustment, not a major loss on the portfolio. So think about that. Well, we have to talk about the Biden $2.2 trillion stimulus plan that was announced. Probably going to be a little hard to get it passed. We're already seeing revolt from both sides, and they're talking about, well, it's too big. Well, it's too small. It's not big enough. You know what? It doesn't have this in it. Oh, we need that in it. Now, we thought last year that there was some beneficiaries to this particular administration's goals and plans for green energy, renewable energy with EV stocks and renewable energy sources. They all ramped over the past several months. And now that hundreds of billions of dollars are planned to be pushed into this area, we have to wonder one of two things. Well, first, is it going to pass? First, are we going to get actually this plan passed to a point where we get this kind of money flowing into these areas? Something is going to probably get done. And we have to then wonder about whether or not we're going to have a sell the news or this is going to be a second leg higher for some of these names. Solar, EV charging, the battery companies, green energy companies. These are all named. I mean, there's a lot of money for charging stations. Look at a Blink or a ChargePoint. You look at some of the other areas and batteries that are out there. Some of the providers, suppliers, manufacturers. There's a lot of opportunity. Look at the solar companies. Been beaten up pretty well, but you know what? There's a shot on the other side that there really could be a lot of money into the renewables from this program. Plus, as this is an industrial beneficiary from the infrastructure build. You have the builders, the machineries and factories, steel, commodities, all benefiting from, you know, the renewed idea of, hey, we're going to have shovel ready. Yep, we're going to do shovel ready again. We're going to get the bridges and the roads and the railroad build outs. I don't know why I just said it that way, but that's something we heard about 10 years ago. Shovel ready. Wondering if there was ever going to be actually a shovel ready. But here we are with the idea that there is a program that is starting to go through the machinations of getting approved. But again, we're still pretty far off from passes. And this is just part one, by the way. There's another package that I'm working on for another $2 trillion on the backside of all this. And with the economy healing, with that great blowout jobs number, 6% unemployment rate, I think we have to talk about bonds and rates. I mean, we're talking about 1.75% as a key level to watch right now. And with that number that we saw on Friday, 900,000 added to the payrolls, revisions higher to the past few months, and a great ISM number, consumer confidence, housing prices, the 210 spread is now about the highest we've seen in about a year. Because we're seeing that the economy is clearly picking up speed. There's no question about that. But the problem is going to be at what cost? And when I say what cost, what I mean is at what level of inflation are we going to be able to withstand? We saw that the bond started moving up again and then kind of leveled off towards the end of March and into April because probably this quarterly rebalance that we talked about a couple of times is in full swing, where a lot of money from the value and growth orientation, primarily value, then some growth, but stocks were pushed into fixed income. We talked about a $500 billion rotation just with some of the balance funds, hedge funds, and pensions that had to take place by strict mandate. They have to do this. It's not a theory. This is a fact. So we have to watch over the next week or so what happens to rates once we get beyond this rebalance period, which is going to go on right through about the next week. Keep watching the correlations because the most sensitive areas to higher rates are probably going to react. And 175 is a level that I'm watching on the 10-year. Why? Well, it's kind of a level we got to before. That's a little bit of a level that is a concern for markets that we're seeing that once that gets to that point, that some of the more highly correlated, like the tech stocks, healthcare, some of the small cap growth are very much watching that as well. Very important to consider this. Now, right before we get to our guest, I want to take a moment here and talk to you. I'm very excited, by the way, about our guest. I haven't had Jack on, Jack Schwager, for a while in this new book. I have it right here. Pretty fascinating discussion. How he grabs the information. We'll talk about this, but I'm really excited about this. But what I want to talk about is Interactive Brokers for a moment. I want to specifically talk about their mutual fund marketplace. Because what this does is it allows you to gain access to low-cost mutual funds, about 40,000 of them, including 36,000 no-load funds and 8,300 no-transaction fee funds. Now, some people didn't know that Interactive Brokers actually has a mutual fund marketplace. Well, here you know now. They don't have any proprietary funds. And their mutual fund marketplace provides access to funds from third parties, including prominent fund families like Allianz, BlackRock, Fidelity. And Interactive Brokers is Benzinga's pick as number one best broker for mutual funds in 2021. So if you do work with stocks and other instruments, and you also like to have a blended portfolio potential with mutual funds, well, Interactive Brokers is something that you really need to consider. I want you to visit ibkr.com/funds so you can understand a lot more about what they are doing and what they have access to for your portfolio. Again, that's ibkr.com/funds. And our guest today is Jack Schwager, and he's a recognized industry expert. He's been on the show many times in the past. He knows all about futures and hedge funds and is the author of a number of really popular books in the financial world. And he's one of the founders of Fundseeder, which is a platform designed to find undiscovered trading talent worldwide and connect unknown successful traders who source with investment capital. So what's really interesting, we're going to talk about his new book, which kind of fits right into that whole Fundseeder thing, Jack, doesn't it?
Yeah, actually, it's funny you mention that because that was the source of the idea. We started Fundseeder. My partner, Manuel Valari, whose idea it was, said, you know, you should really think about doing a wizard book, you know, on people we find. And I said, you know, so he put it actually on the website that, you know, one of the things, if you join Fundseeder, you know, you might end up being the next market wizard book type thing. And I had no particular plans of when I would write or whatever, just sort of something out there. But, things progressed and I got to a point where I was ready to write another book, and Fundseeder was a source for a number of the people in the book, and I knew some other traders who had, you know, invisible profiles but had done enormously well. And on my Twitter account, I just put out a notice saying I was doing another book, and if you know some undiscovered, market wizards, let me know. And that was another source, so that was the book.
Right. So let me just kind of set the stage also for people who maybe don't know. You have a whole series called Market Wizards, which is a discussion with various talents around the world and how they became successful in trading, investing, et cetera. Now, this new book is called Unknown Market Wizards, The Best Traders You Never Heard Of, and it's in the same basic profile as a discussion with them. And I have so many questions about this because, you know, you've been interviewing some of the leading names in the investment world, some of the leading names in history in the investment world. And I think the first question that I always think about is, what is it that common thread that ties them all together? There's got to be something.
Yeah, well, there are multiple threads, and you can think of it maybe like 50 ingredients. You know, you don't need all 50 ingredients. Not everybody has all 50 ingredients, but they share a lot of them, and you know, then there's the one rare exception. But essentially, there are certain common elements. The most common element is virtually, and I say virtually, but because it's not 100%, but almost. They have very, very strong commitment to preserving capital, to pay more attention to not losing money than making money. That is kind of maybe the most common. Another common denominator is they tend to be, you know, flexible in their thinking, certainly at least as demonstrated in their opinions about markets, and the ability to be able to quickly admit that you're wrong or even jump the fence and go to the other side, that comes up again and again and again. So this flexibility not to be tied to your own opinion and your own ego, and just to be able to take information as it is definitely, you know, one of the big ones. They tend to be very disciplined people, really disciplined people, you know, so it's not like they, you know, it's not like the image of a trader, you know, people might have of a trader kind of sitting down and just, oh, well, let's see what I'll buy this, I'll do this, you know, take a shot here. They've got methodologies, they stick to their approaches, they cut their losses, they're able to make difficult decisions quickly. So that discipline, that's another, you know, really, you know, important thing. So hopefully it gives you kind of a flavor of the type of character that leads to, or at least makes possible, great success in the markets. It doesn't mean that if you have those, you'll be successful in markets, right? But those are kind of prerequisites.
So, you know, it's interesting because you talk about some in the book, there's some people that have taken, you know, just made incredible amounts of money, but it's kind of fascinating that at the same time you mention that they have a very significant amount of discipline to cut losses, which a lot of times when you get involved in that, listen, I've been doing involved markets for 30 years, you know, oftentimes you cut your losses and sometimes those losses are, you know, hiccups, movements against you because of one reason or the other that may or may not have been, you know, because you have to, when you have to admit that you're wrong, you know, where is that point that you're like, I am wrong, right? Is it here? Is it a little lower? Is it a little bit lower than that? Is it like, okay, well, right. Maybe everybody else is thinking something I'm not thinking. You know, that's a hard thing to really, at the same time, cut your losses and at the same time make incredible amounts of money. We're not talking about 3% on average per year for these guys, right?
In the number of people in this book, the percentage, you know, they had like 200-300% a year.
Right.
Dozen years. So, I mean, crazy numbers. So, there's one person in the book, probably the most, maybe the best trader I've interviewed. I don't know. But he started out with under $5,000, 16, 17 years ago. When I did the book, he was over 50 million. And I've spoken to him since then. He's quintupled that, you know, so it's, you know, he did phenomenal in the past year and a half. So, not that he didn't do phenomenal before, but, you know, kind of extraordinary type of results like
right.
that. So it is possible. Some people have the talent. The performance of that type is exceptional. It's not like anybody can do this. It's I think some people are born to do it. You know?
Is there a lot of leverage? Is there a lot of leverage that is used in a lot of these in these strategies?
Yes, some of these guys do use lots of leverage. A number of the traders use really a lot of leverage, but it's very focused and very short term. So they'll have an opinion, you know, some central banks could be making an announcement. They'll have a very strong opinion about if something is said, what it'll mean. And they'll be sitting there ready to take, you know, to go into the market very large at the instant they hear something they're expecting. And they'll take the trade if they'll be out before the end of the day on all of it or most of it. And if it doesn't go their way within the first minute, they're out of it. So they may be using a lot of leverage, but it's very, very focused.
So it's very quick.
They have to be, that ties back to discipline. You can't do that unless you're extremely disciplined. You hesitate for a couple of minutes and you can be dead in a situation like
right.
that.
Right.
One of the guys tells a story where he once hesitated and learned his lesson. So.
either the fact pattern works out, and particularly in trading, different than investing, of course, that's a whole different discussion.
Those two, very, very different. You know, those are completely different things you shouldn't do if you're trading versus investing.
Yeah. So over the last number of years, you've written books. What was the first date of the first Market Wizards book or the first year?
The first one, I did the interviews in 88. The book came out in 89.
So over that time period, that's a pretty good time period, and you've written many books since then. What has changed?
Well, the market's changed enormously. So back when I did the first Market Wizards book, I was talking to guys who their track record went back pre-computer, you know, pre-PC, and went back, first of all, we were dealing in a world with the futures guys, at least, where we were dealing with commodity, you know, we had pits, you know, not electronic trading. That was a big transition. We didn't have PCs even. Now we've got supercomputers. We've got hedge funds that have 100 math quants working for them. There's been, you know, you have AI, you have high frequency trading, which is highly computerized endeavor. So you've got this enormous quantification of the markets. That's been probably maybe one of the most radical changes in markets ever that has occurred as the speed of technology. So that's been a big
investing, or is it just looking at the commoditization of the markets and looking for the benefit points? In other words, you know, when you're talking about the algos and you're talking about the quants and having the mathematicians running this, it's not like they're looking at necessarily flaws in a financial statement. They're looking at more oftentimes of flaws in pricing inflection points or potentially looking for errors in a pricing, like maybe a, you know, hey, if we buy this option, we can offset it with this stock and arbitrage it, right? There's a lot of that going on.
Yeah. And that's a reasonable, that's a simple example of the type of, you know, quant trading, although it's on a much more complex level. But looking from this pricing, it's just a different type. It's just a different approach of trading. So it's not the traditional fundamental, looking at the company and going through all the analytics and all that. Although that's done too, and this is kind of different. This is maybe looking at lots of related securities, you know, similar stocks which are correlated, options, other types of derivatives, similar stocks maybe in other world markets, and look at well, of course, this is done sort of quantified. So when we're talking about these type of firms, and their programs are basically looking for mismatches in pricing where there's, they'll buy this set of securities and sell that set of securities, and they hope to have a small edge, and that's how they, that's how they generate profits. It's just one approach. But I'm saying that type of approach would have been impossible,
right?
Not hard, but impossible when I did the first market. This is, maybe when I did it, it would have been possible, but not during the track records of the people that I spoke to in that.
Right. I mean, it's almost like the idea of Walmart going for and finding the cheapest plates where they can have the greatest margin on them. That's what it is. I mean, if you think about it, right, they're going, hey, we need to sell plates to make money. Let's go, or paper plates. I'm just thinking of that because I happen to have looking at a paper plate in front of me, or a T-shirt. Let's find where we can get the greatest margin, find it for the lowest cost, knock it down, have that price inefficiency work in our favor. It's kind of like, I don't know, it seems to be.
Yeah, that's a reasonable analogy to that type of approach.
Yeah.
But the thing that I would point out is, despite this enormous quantification, the traders I'm talking to are not, I'm not talking to, those type of traders. And in their case, they're just like these, solo traders who are working from the home office. They have a PC and all that, but they're not using those type of approaches. They found their own methodologies. And the interesting thing is that I thought when I did this book, I would never find people with the track records like we had in that earlier period where there were, much fewer sophisticated traders and these guys were all early on and stuff like that. But to my surprise, I found some track records which were as good as any, if not better. So apparently, it's still possible to find approaches in the market that if you have the right type of character traits and the creativity to find these approaches, it's still possible to do extraordinarily well.
So now looking at all of this, and have you watched the show Billions?
I didn't finish. I started watching. I guess it may be about four episodes in, but I didn't complete it.
I think it's a great show. It's just, I was going to ask you if you think it's realistic for what's, kind of, and who it's modeled after, but you haven't really watched it.
I haven't watched it. I haven't watched it enough. I mean, the episodes I saw were more involved with just human greed and not so much trading.
Right. Well, that gets us into the discussion about hedge funds these days, because, you obviously have ties to and know of and discussed with and interviewed many people involved in the hedge fund world. The concept of the hedge fund world is a very big sector, if you will. Why are they getting such a bad name? I mean, this whole thing about the suits on Wall Street, is it deserved?
Well, not necessarily. Hedge funds since the financial crisis, talking about 2008, have tremendously underperformed, because we've had an extraordinary bull market, long-term bull market, and hedge funds will underperform. So I think part of the knock is they just haven't performed. And, a lot of that is to be expected. If you tell me that you're going to have a 12 or 15 year strong bull market, and obviously, if you knew that ahead of time, it'd be much better just going into an index than than chances of hedge. And also, there's so many, they proliferated to such a great extent. And it's hard to find, you know, who are really great, you know, the great ones among so many, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of hedge funds.
Right. Now, this latest news that happened over the last couple of weeks or so with this gent with one of the Tiger Cubs that he, you know, pounded into the markets and all this. What are your thoughts on the family office? I mean, it seems to me that whenever I hear that somebody's opening a family office, I immediately think, all right, well, obviously they got nailed for something. They're insider trading or some other bad action that they've done. And now they're going to, you know, they were found guilty. They can't work in the industry anymore. But somehow magically they open up a family office, which has little to or no oversight on what they do. I mean, is this something that's going to be
typically, which is fine, because typically, you know, a lot of times it's essentially their own money, so they're perfectly entitled to, you know, do what they want with their own money. And I think in this particular case you're mentioning that was the case. Overall, I mean, they just are set up to manage their own money in a best possible way, which is their prerogative. You know, it's, if they're not setting themselves, you know, if they're managing goals to other money, then they have to be registered to that effect and all of that. And in this particular case, from what I know, essentially, and I should say here, I give credit to Patrick Boyle, who does a financial podcast. He's finance professor and is and also has been involved in the investment world, but he does these like little features when there's news like this, and he had one very recently, people can just look it up on just look up Patrick Boyle podcast or whatever, I'll find it anyway. So he explains it, I happen to listen to that particular episode, and so giving credit to him, as he explained it, what happened is, as best as can be determined, this fellow just took enormous leverage positions through derivatives on stocks. Instead of buying stocks where there's more limits on how much leverage you could take, he had all these banking arrangements would take positions that were tied to the stock, it would profit or lose directly as its stock price went up or down. And, they're called contracts for difference, have some other names as well. And therefore could, with the banks, make terms that took much greater leveraging amount of money. So it wasn't so much, and I don't think it's known exactly which ones he had, but the point was he had these enormously leveraged positions. And this guy's a billionaire, didn't need to do it really. His downfall seems to have been that he just took these extremely leveraged positions, and when they started going south, that was the downfall.
Yeah. The book that we mentioned earlier, Unknown Market Wizards, how it ties into Fund Seeder. Tell me about what's going. I mean, when you started that, tell me about how that's going, what that's doing, how it's progressing.
Great. So originally it was purely the technology platform, which we created, you know, free for traders. They can go on, link their accounts with many brokers, and where the broker's not participating, they can upload their daily data. And they can get all sorts of performance analytics, see their equity curves, their what we call underwater curves, you know, show all the drawdowns in a graphic form, lots of statistics. They can even do technical analysis on our equity curve, stuff like that. And our goal was simply to provide this free, so traders would be attracted, and we'd find people who might be really good traders and are kind of unknown, with the intention or forethought that the sister company, which is Fund Seeder Investments, would eventually then be able to have a database which they could tap into and then tie in with investment money. And well, actually, that's that, you know, so Fund Seeder Investments has just gotten going in an active way. And we're currently actually structuring our first, I just got the documents for the first fund, you know, multi-trader fund.
Wow.
So we're just at the threshold now of beginning to take these traders and, and allocate money to them, and either directly through our funds or by tying them to some institutional money.
So closing this up and helping people understand how would this book or your previous books, the Wizards series, I'll call them, how is it going to make people a better investor and trader by reading this?
Okay, so let me break that up, the investment part, you know, the investment versus trader part separately, leave that aside for the moment, but let's talk about the trading side. I kind of truly believe that if you, and I'm not just saying this to plug my own book, but I say this because I've had this feedback thousands of times from people who've read the books. And if you read, what I'm trying to do is model what great traders do, and I'm trying to dig in and figure out and get them to talk about what they do and how they do it and why they've been successful and why they, and when they fail, why they fail. And I think if somebody seriously reads through these chapters and these people and learns from their experience, and a lot of them are very specific in terms of giving advice, I think you can become a better trader. I certainly don't want people to think they're going to become market wizards. I won't even guarantee people they'll make money in the markets. They may not, you know. But what I feel comfortable saying is that anybody who seriously reads it thoroughly and absorbs it and takes those items from those traders who relate to what they're doing and adopt it, that they can improve as traders, whatever they were. You know, if they were losing, lose less or maybe start making money. If they were making, maybe they'll make more. But I think you can improve as a trader by learning from great people.
Yeah.
People who've been exceptional.
Yeah.
And so that's what I think, you know, that's what the promise is. Yeah. Now, investment and trading, and I make this point at the end of the book, they're different. You know, trading, we're talking about you're going into position, you're not intending to hold it for a long term. You think there's a situation here where a stock or futures or whatever is going to move one way or the other. You've defined your risk, you've planned the trade, and that's what it is. But investment is kind of different. If you believe, let's say, that, particularly if you're young, if you're in your 20s, 30s, whatever, and this is not the ideal time to say this because the market has been up so much over so long. But generally speaking, let's say a situation where that's not necessarily the case, and you believe that long term that, whether the market as a whole, or maybe you want to say green stocks or whatever, whatever you might mm-hmm. think, have a conviction mm-hmm. on, then that's going to be a long-term profitable investment, okay? Then it's not trading. Then you buy it and you hold it and you hold it and you hold it, and then the type of thing that work for trading don't work, because you don't want to get out on the first little pullback because you'll be knocked out of the investment. That's not what investment.
That was my original point on that. If you're taking losses too quickly, how do you make money? But if it is a trading, so just to set the stage here, if you're trading a future, if you're trading a commodity, if you're trading even an ETF, let's say, in large amounts for a particular day trade or swing trade, the fact is, if it moves in your direction, does what you want it to do, hey, that's all good to go. If it doesn't work with you, we're not talking about, 2 cents, it moves against you. We're talking about if it moves against you and your thesis on the setup does not work out. As you mentioned, the Fed's going to say this, markets are going to react this way, that all has to line up, then I'm good to go, click the button, I buy. But if something happens that all of a sudden the market takes it a different way, or maybe, I don't know, Powell coughs in the middle of the discussion and all of a sudden everybody, oh, what's happening there? That may be a different circumstance. So I totally get it.
Yeah, right. In those cases, when you're talking about trading, you have to have ideally a predetermined amount of money you're willing to lose on any trade.
Yeah.
And it's all about preserving capital. You want to have a small percent loss on any trade so you'll still be in the game.
Right. I get it.
Investing, you're basically making a choice. I'd rather hold this group of stocks than hold money. That's what your choice is. Okay?
I got you.
But you're not saying it's going to go now. I say I'm going to hold it for the next 20 years. That's a different type of approach.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a different function. And you can do both. But you know, and I do both. You know, like, so I'll have you know, I'll have some holdings that I consider investment. But the key is you have to define ahead of time what's an investment and what's a trade. Too many people start out for trade, and then when it starts going down, says, I'll hold it for a long-term investment. No, that's cheating.
So
that doesn't work.
A couple of things just to close up. Again, the book Unknown Market Wizards and the Market Wizard series, Jack Schwager, you can get it on any fine bookstore. When you are ready, Jack, you know, by the way, this is a show 708. We've been doing this 14 years, the original podcast in the area of the longest running, by the way, the longest running financial and investment podcast out there. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I'm not, but congratulations.
When you are going to write that next book, which I'm titling it for you now, okay? I'm setting this up. Podcast Wizards. I'd like to have a shot.
Sure.
You don't sound too shut up about it, but okay.
I wouldn't give good odds on that being my next book, I'm not even sure I'll do another book, but in any case.
I hear you.
Hey, congratulations on that long record.
Yeah. Thanks. Hey, thanks for joining me. We'll have all the information on the show notes, episode 708 on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Jack Schwager, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Nice speaking to you again. Take care.
Thanks. Bye. I just love talking to smart people. Jack is definitely one of them. I mean, look at what he has put together, how he blended years of the Market Wizards books and series into Unknown Market Wizards, and then pushed that into creating a tracking system for investing, and then eventually funding those investors to run their own portfolios. That fits together so beautifully. Think about the beauty and how that has smoothly worked together to maintain a high level of oversight and then create opportunity for those investors that maybe didn't have some way to really raise capital. Brilliant. Just absolutely brilliant. Check out the book. I really think you'll enjoy it. There's some amazing stories in there. One of the things about the book is that, and I think that this bears mentioning, because I'm going to pick it up right now and kind of take you through something here. Each chapter is kind of standalone, right? There's a discussion about and a dialogue with questions and answers about and to each trader. Some answers are a little bit longer, some are shorter. But you can skip around the book and find things that you really identify with, or maybe areas that you want to hone and do better with in your own investing. Something to learn for everybody. We're going to end it right there. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. We have some great guests coming up in the next few weeks. Many of you have asked me, hey, you know what? We love the guests, but we also love hearing you. That's why we do a little front-end work here and talk a lot about what's going on with markets. We'll have some free-flowing shows with no guests coming up as well. Make sure to tell your friends, please plug us on iTunes and all the other podcasting networks and directories. Give us a quick review. Give us some nice, some love. And then it helps us out to understand what we could do better moving forward. Again, thanks so much for joining me. I am going to see you again next week. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.